Hello, I'm Rafik, and you're watching the Garbled Twistery Channel.
Greetings once again. It is Garbled Twistery, and these VP candidates for the 1828 U.S. election are really starting to strut their stuff. No, really, things are getting real intense. And what better way to celebrate the intensity than by revisiting our old friend Johnny Cowhide, a man notorious for his intensity. And as you may well have guessed, this episode will be a rebroadcast with the new information at the 15 minute and 3 second mark. So let's get this party started! So, Mr. Cowhide was born in the South Carolina Bean. Yes, it's going to be one of those stories. His father's name was Pat, and his mother was a Martha. Also, Johnny's grandpa, his name was Patrick, too, and he was living in Potato Land. But then his entire county had this wild meeting where they were all like, quote, "We're tired of eating potatoes, and we want some Philly cheesesteak. Pennsylvania, here we come," unquote. Yeah, so Grandpa made that move, and he got his cheesesteak or whatever, so he died happy. And then Daddy Patrick took the family to freaking Virginia for a spell, but then that crazy baguette and powwow war showed up in their own backyard, and the big fat tea sipper lost that Monongahela battle, and the whole fam was like right there when that happened. So of course, they're gonna move again. Living in a war zone is just not kosher, okay? So yeah, Daddy Patrick was able to acclimate himself into some fancy pants Irish Scottish ninja village hidden in South Carolina. And he was one of those people on the front lines of battling the Americans that were here first. I mean, of course, that wasn't all he was doing. He was also staring at pieces of land for money and planting trees and shouting on a soapbox in the town square and feeding clam bellies to the pigs. But yeah, the father found his way into the South Carolina Bean legislature. And honestly, it's a lot more impressive than one would initially expect, because religiously, Daddy Patrick was a vegetarian, while everyone else with power in the Lima Bean was a freaking angel dust believer. Dad also joined the New England Patriots in the first great American temper tantrum, and he also, like, really wasn't about that Constitution when it dropped like an album. Yeah, he's one of those states' rights kind of folks. And this is important, because states' rights kind of folks are exceptionally talented at instilling that particular belief into their children. It's like a superpower. But enough context. Let's talk about our boy, Johnny Cowhide. What was he like in school, you ask? Well, somehow he found a way to be a total nerd, even though schools in the South Carolina Bean, like, barely even exist. But I mean, he did show up at some nerd academy for nerds in Georgia for, like, T-minus 3 seconds. The school got closed, though, so Johnny Cowhide had to figure out all his schoolwork and stuff all by his lonesome for a spell. Speaking of things closing, his daddy Cowhide did, like, die and stuff. And all of Johnny's older brothers were already fancy pants businessman. So he was left to tend not only to the family farm, but like 5 other farms because he just loves milking the cows that much. Yes, sirree. Johnny would go hunting, and then he would go fishing, and then he would read a thesaurus, and it was rinse, lather, repeat for like 4 years straight. And when Fancy Pants Academy opened up again, it was straight back to the nerd life for farm boy. Anyways, as mentioned earlier, Johnny's brothers were making a lot of moolah, so they were able to pay for our guy to go to freaking Yale. And as one would expect, he only got nerdier when he was there. Timmy Dwight, an uppity Federalist Connecticut man, decided he really liked Cowhide's spunk. So he became a mentor to our boy, Johnny. And Johnny, being a big fat nerd himself, admired this man like a character from a Jump manga. Quote,
He knows the meta. He loves himself a Calvin. The man is a genius, unquote.
Even though the man was a genius, Johnny wasn't gonna sit there and let some Federalist named Timmy talk trash about Tommy J's policies. And Timmy would always reply with, LOL, you are young and stupid. But honestly, maybe both of them were kind of stupid, because mentor Timmy over here thought that New England would be able to successfully become its own little Federalist country and literally leave the Union, which sounds bonkers to me. But Johnny had quite a fun time at Yale either way. He made a lot of friends, read a lot of books, joined a debate club with a secret handshake, the works. He graduated as a Valley Girl dictator, like most nerds often do, and he went to some lawyer school that wasn't even affiliated with some kind of bougie school or whatever. It was the first of its kind, but either way, he did the Lima Bean limbo and passed the bar. But how is that love life, huh? I did say he made friends. Did he make any special friends? Let me tell you, he didn't make enough to stop him from marrying his first cousin once removed and having 10 kids with this cousin named after dental cream. Not only that, but 7 of those kids lived past babyhood. As for religion, Johnny Cowhide wasn't super duper religious or whatever. Like, he was religious in the same way Tommy J was, which essentially means not very. That said, the southern flavor of Unist player Christianity is a lot more raggedy than the New England barbecue flavor. His wife, Floride, did go to the Epicenter Church after they got married, and he did eventually end up helping in founding a Unist player church in the Capitol. But as you could probably imagine, Johnny Cowhide's personality is very I start every love letter with the word whereas, if you know what I mean. Okay, now let's talk politics. How did this man become so popular, huh? Well, remember that Irish-Scottish ninja clan? Yeah, they were able to band together and get this fella a neat seat in the big boy House of Reps. And being the rough-and-tumble South Carolinian, as well as one of the potato farmer peeps that were being xenophobed by the Federalists earlier, this man is obviously ready to fire some guns at the tea sippers. He was leading the charge there, okay? Really, like alongside the Clayman and the London guy, 3 were the gun guys. And this position made him distinct from not just the New England peeps, but other Democrat Republicans who just hated Tommy J's guts. And Johnny Cowhide, that sneaky man, he somehow ended up leading the committee on dealing with other countries. So of course he's gonna borrow some of the words from the Great American Breakup Song and be all like, quote, "Tea sipping is still tyranny. We can't let them keep sipping tea during these kidnappings. It's just not right," unquote. So yeah, this guy is pretty largely responsible for getting everybody all upset and starting another war with half the world conquering tea zippers. I mean, yes, earlier mistakes that have nothing to do with Cowhide could have not happened to avoid the second war entirely, but Johnny was still speeding up towards the drop at the end of that particular roller coaster. But whatever. War is declared, the tea sippers start blowing everything up, there's no money, which means there's no guns, the trade ports are being blockaded, taking Canada is apparently actually very hard to do, and our guy Johnny Cowhide was apparently in charge of all this nonsense. See what you got yourself into, man? The thing that happens when you poke a bear is that you learn very quickly that it knows Northern Praying Mantis Chinese martial arts. So as you can imagine, all the anti-war people were looking at Johnny Cowhide and doing their respective Kermit the Frog Lipton tea commercials, frankly as they should. And sure, a couple of big invasions from the tea sippers were stopped, but I think Johnny Cowhide is super lucky that the Neapolitan ice cream man stopped threatening everybody in Europe. Cause if this kept going, my bet's on him not being a politician anymore. But I digress. the Treaty of Gout happens, Nancy Drew Jackson fights that useless battle that starts his political shenanigans, everybody's feeling good, life goes on. Johnny's reflecting on everything that happened, and he's thinking, maybe I can help make a legitimate military before I start picking fights again. To which I say, too little too late, bro. But whatever. He gets started working on that Navy infrastructure, so moving around is easier, getting people to pay taxes so money can freaking exist next time, and setting up a new bank for the whole nation, because Hammy Tammy was right about at least that, and everybody had to learn that lesson the hard way, apparently. Was Cowhide still a states' rights nut after that harrowing experience? Oh, absolutely. He's just being extra quiet about it now, because now's not the time. Speaking of keeping quiet, Johnny didn't. He was always running his mouth and being blunt to the point where other people in Congress would cry themselves to sleep over it. But Johnny also spoke with very flowery language, and he would violently rehearse his public speaking skills in the mirror. He also did his homework on the issues too, so as to not sound like a total doofus. But the thing is, he was such a nerd about everything that he wasn't charming at all. When I say blunt, I mean blunt force trauma and not a charming, gravelly cowboy voice. In other words, the dude was just mean. But you still had to respect him because he did the homework. Anyways, let's cut to 1817. The War Department is in shambles, and President Man Ray is ripping his hair out trying to get someone to be a freaking war secretary. This job was declined by like 4 people in a row immediately. But you know who thought he was up for it? Yup, Johnny Cowhide. And since the war was over and everybody was feeling good or whatever, Johnny decided to focus on like infrastructure. He wanted a regular Navy, a regular Army, permanent roads, manufacturing, and some taxes to pay for all this stuff. So yeah, he wanted all this stuff, but Congress was being real lazy and even, surprise, supree, rude. So he created this whole bureau that still exists today to help with these needs, and more specifically, consulting and or assaulting, take your pick, the Native Americans to achieve these goals. Speaking of Native Americans, the War Department was in charge of dealings with them too. Why the War Department? Because Johnny Cowhide and the other bougie folks would love nothing more than to round them up and send them to some designated land so the U.S. government didn't have to deal with them. But of course, the objective was to paint it all nice and do it with treaties, which Johnny made dozens of. That said, when Nancy Drew Jackson started being super violent and invading Disney World without even thinking about it, Johnny Cowhide was fed up with that man's shenanigans. Quote, I done told that man a million times you can't go break the Constitution and start shooting the natives, unquote. This was technically a lie, though. Nancy Drew didn't get any official memos telling him not to go buck wild in Florida. That said, when Nancy Drew started straight up executing tea-sipping people that he thought liked the Native Americans too much, Johnny was all about it. It was his personal belief that the tea-sippers ought not to allow the Native Americans to believe in their own freedom and stuff. But Disney World got bought by the U.S. soon after that anyway, so whatever. Anyways, remember how everybody was getting real heated on whether slavery was gonna freaking happen when Missouri became a state or not? Remember how it got so freaking bad that people were talking about, like, breaking off from the whole country? Well, Johnny didn't think it was gonna end up like that, but, quote, if the South does get fed up enough to do that over a single freaking state, I guess we'd have no choice but to start drinking tea again, lol, but I'm sure that Quincy from Bleach has it handled, unquote. But I mean, it's a hard job being a war secretary after a war. Why? Because nobody wants to give you the military resources the war taught you you needed. Not during peacetime. So when Cowhide gets it in his mind that, hey, maybe being the president or the vice president would be cool because I've been busting my butt all this time doing a job nobody wants, his opponents like Billy Crawfish just have to say,
Yo, why is this fella raising a whole army when we aren't even at war? You call this a democracy? And let me tell you, everybody, and by everybody, I mean especially those squids, was actively trying to sell off the war drums. Johnny Cowhide was losing funding, the number of troops were cut in half, and there was nothing he could do about it. I mean, what was he gonna say? We're in the middle of a war? I mean, the best he could do was assign some guy named Jakey B to be a commander-in-chief of the whole army, which was helpful because if that second temper tantrum revealed anything, it was that the military had some serious disorganization issues.
So the 1828 election shows up and Cowhide's hat is in the whole ring. And as we know, it's a four-way deadlock for the Iron Throne between Cowhide, Nancy Drew, the Quincy, and the Crawfish. And Cowhide thought his chances were pretty decent. Well, he thought that until the South Carolina bean kicked him to the curb and Pennsylvania passive-aggressively told him he'd make a better second banana, causing the other states to begin chanting,
second banana, second banana, second banana, second banana.
So I guess Cowhide decided to give the people what they wanted and rode an entire landslide into the vice principal role. And as we know, the Iron Throne race went into a super hyper double tiebreaker in the House of Reps. One that the Quincy from Bleach ended up coming out on top of in a rather controversial twist. And then this man had the audacity to give the Clay Man the state secretary job? Let's just say Nancy Drew is watching closely, okay? And frankly, even Cowhide had some of the same suspicions. And you know what they say about suspicious vice principals? Yeah, there's some drama on the horizon. Speaking of drama, apparently the Quincy is gonna send some people to some conference in Panama? Like, what? Johnny Cowhide is not about all this meddling in foreign affairs nonsense, okay? And don't get that man started about the Quincy's taxes, those stupid taxes, for the sake of infrastructure? Cowhide knows a ripoff when he sees one. What about states' rights? Yeah, this worried Cowhide so freaking much that he wrote a whole letter to Nancy Drew. I have it right here. Quote,
"Listen, sweaty, I don't like you very much, but President Quincy scares me even more than you. So I'm gonna stab him directly in the back when election time comes around, and I'll be running to your corner once the knife is snug," unquote.
This surely is a fascinating proposition indeed. I wonder how Nancy Drew is going to respond to such a tantalizing invitation to cause another ruckus. If you've got something to say about this episode, about the podcast, or about, I don't know, children with megaphones, you can find Garble Twistery on Facebook and Twitter, or you can head to garbletwistery.net and send a message in the contact section, or you can email moi. My email is Rafiq, that's R-A-F-I-Q, at garbletwistery.net. Also, I have Patreon, so if you go to Patreon and become a patron, you'll gain not only the access, but the ability to determine what topics get to be Patreon-exclusive bonus content, and right now I'm strategizing about competitive COD games. Sounds fun, don't it? Anyways, next time, we're moving to the big boy candle dates. Who are we revisiting this time? Oh, it's the reigning champ from your favorite anime. That's right.
Let's get ready to watch some Bleach.
This is the ending. I'm ending it now.